I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 19th, and we have a lot to talk about. And we are talking about the COVID-19 vaccine guidance for people living with MS that the National MS Society released last week. Now, we discussed the guidance in some detail in last week's episode of Real Talk MS, and if you haven't listened to that episode, you may want to do so before you listen to this episode. So we talked about the guidance last week, and this week you had questions. I got your emails, your DMs, your voicemails. So this week, Dr. Nancy Sicott is returning to Real Talk MS to answer some of your questions. Dr. Sicott is the chair of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee, and she led the expert task force that the MS Society convened to develop the COVID-19 vaccine guidance for people living with MS. We're also going to talk with another returning guest, Diane Kramer. Diane is a nurse. She's living with MS. Her disease-modifying therapy is Ocrevus, and Diane has already received the COVID-19 vaccine. So we'll hear Diane's firsthand experiences with the vaccine. But in a moment, we're going to start with your questions about the COVID-19 vaccine and MS when we meet my guest, Dr. Nancy Sicott. Dr. Nancy Sicott is a professor and chair of the Department of Neurology at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, where she's also the director of the Multiple Sclerosis Program and founding director of the Neurology Residency Training Program. Dr. Sicott also chairs the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee, and she led the expert task force that the MS Society convened to develop the COVID-19 vaccine guidance for people living with MS. Now, Dr. Sicott joined me last month for the final episode of Real Talk MS for 2020, where we talked about the work that this task force was engaged in. She promised to return once the COVID-19 vaccine guidance was released, and Dr. Sicott is joining me today to answer some of the questions about the vaccine guidance that you've all shared with me. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Sicott.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
As I've combed through the questions that I've received from our listeners, they seem to fall into two categories. There are questions about the vaccine in general, and there are questions about the vaccine as it specifically relates to MS. So I thought we could get some of the more general questions taken care of first. Question I've heard a lot, actually: the vaccines were produced in record time. What would you say to those people who believe that they were produced too quickly and that we don't know enough about them to judge their safety?
So I think this is a reasonable point based on a lot of the discussion that was in the media at the time that the vaccines were being developed. But I do want to reassure your listeners that the usual and customary scientific procedure was followed in assessing the safety and efficacy of the vaccines that we now have available to us here in the United States. And that includes a very rigorous process of what we call phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3 studies. And phase 3 is the ultimate gold standard for assessing efficacy and safety of therapeutic agents, and is what we use to develop our scientific recommendations and our evidence-based information that we use to help figure out if something is working or not. And this includes doing all of the safety evaluations that would normally happen in a vaccination trial, as well as the follow-up period after vaccination in order to collect any data about adverse events and side effects. So all of those usual and customary procedures were followed in the process of bringing these to the FDA for approval. So people should feel confident in that.
Can someone contract COVID-19 from the COVID-19 vaccine?
Absolutely not. And that is because the vaccine does not include virus. It includes a very small piece of information, sort of the blueprint for a key component of the viral structure, which is the spike protein. So all of us have seen that ugly picture of the virus with those red blobs on the outside. The spike protein is the key piece of the virus that allows it to adhere to our cells and get into our cells, where it then causes all the problems. So the vaccines are just take a small piece of information that produces those, what we call spike proteins, but does not include any information that would make it a true virus, just a piece of it.
Now, can someone still contract COVID-19 after they've received the vaccine?
So this is an interesting question. And the truth is, yes, you can still get it if you've only been in the early stages of vaccination. So the full protection from the vaccine is not realized until you've received the second dose, which is typically 3 to 4 weeks after the first dose. And that's when you get that 95% protection. And that probably is to reach peak would be a week or so after you get that second vaccination. Unfortunately, we've had episodes here, examples here at the medical center of our health staff who got their vaccine and then just a few days later, unfortunately, contracted the virus. So just getting your first vaccination does not protect you. You have to go through the full 2-vaccination protocol, and then there does take a little bit of time for your immune system to get fully up to speed.
You know, along with the vaccine guidance that your group developed, the MS Society also issued a statement, and the statement could not be more clear. It reads, "Get your vaccine as soon as it is available to you." Now, speaking of as soon as it's available, I know that some people with certain health conditions have been categorized as high risk, and the CDC is recommending that they receive the vaccine sooner than the rest of the general population. Does that group include people with MS?
So, John, that's a great question. And at this time, it does not specifically include people who have MS, but the National MS Society and others are working to lobby our each of the CDC as well as individual states to include individuals living with MS in this category. However, we do know that there are these other comorbidities that have been identified. And so for individuals who are living with MS, if you have one of these other comorbidities, you are then eligible to receive the vaccine. So currently, advice is for anyone over the age of 65 that they should have access to the vaccine. And these other conditions that also increase risk for severe COVID, which include cancer and chronic kidney disease, pulmonary disease, heart conditions, severe obesity, that would be a BMI over 40, pregnancy, sickle cell disease, smoking, and type 2 diabetes. If you happen to have any one of these other comorbidities and are also living with MS, you would be eligible under the CDC guidelines to have access to the vaccine. Once we get to that group, which is the 1C group, we're currently at 1B, and we're moving very quickly across the country to build to bring up these in vaccination centers to handle the large number of people that will be in that 1C group.
I've seen some people respond in social media to the society's vaccine guidelines, saying that they're concerned because people with MS were excluded from the clinical trials. So perhaps there isn't enough known about how the vaccines are going to impact people with MS, so it's probably better to sit and wait. So can you talk a bit about how your task force arrived at these guidelines and the science that you looked at?
So thanks for that, John. And I think this is a tricky needle to thread for individuals living with MS. So we based our guidance not on specific studies of these vaccines in individuals living with MS. We just don't have the luxury of having that data. However, we have a lot of information that we can draw from, and that includes a long history of the safety of vaccines for individuals who are living with MS. And that includes flu vaccine and other vaccines that people receive on a routine basis. The only exception, and I think causes some of the confusion, is that there is a general recommendation to avoid live vaccines, in particular in people who are immunocompromised. So live vaccines, which are very rare and do not apply in this situation. So first and foremost, our task force established that vaccinations are safe in general for people who have multiple sclerosis. Then we looked at the safety data from the two large phase 3 clinical trials of these mRNA vaccines. And we looked very carefully to see if there are any evidence that there were what we would call inflammatory events or other kinds of side effects in this large, very large groups of people who were treated with the vaccine. And we found no evidence of that. The final piece is how well do the vaccines work? Because we're going to be doing a risk-benefit analysis whenever we recommend any kind of intervention. And the vaccines are stupendously effective, 95% effective in preventing COVID infection and 100% effective in preventing severe COVID. We couldn't have wished or hoped for anything better than this outcome. And so this is part of the reason why we were very strong in our recommendation that individuals receive the vaccination, because it, from everything that we can draw from, it is safe, it is highly effective, and we know that COVID-19 can be deadly.
Evidence shows that as a group, people with progressive MS tend to do worse with COVID-19 compared to people with relapsing remitting MS. So maybe just to reiterate what I think is an important aspect of the guidance your group has developed, should people with progressive MS get the vaccine?
Absolutely. And in fact, because they are at a higher risk for developing severe COVID, we would hope that they could get to the front of the line and get the vaccine sooner than someone perhaps who has relapsing MS. But absolutely, those individuals who are living with progressive MS are at a higher risk for developing severe outcomes with COVID, and they should be vaccinated. Absolutely.
Can the vaccine or maybe the side effects from the vaccine cause an MS relapse?
So I think this is an important point and one that we will be communicating very carefully to our patient population as the vaccine rolls out and becomes available. There is no evidence that the vaccine causes new relapses or new inflammatory activity in MS. There is no evidence for that. The vaccine does have some side effects after the injection, which is the typical kinds of things that we've all experienced when we've had our flu shot, for example. So some soreness, some muscle aches, and in some individuals, there could be a low-grade fever. And all of our MS patients know in the setting of a low-grade fever, we sometimes see a worsening of underlying symptoms or an emergence of old symptoms coming out in this setting. So we might see that in some small group of people who get the vaccine, but no evidence of a new attack or new exacerbation.
What about people on disease-modifying therapies? Should they get the vaccine, and are there any interactions between their disease-modifying therapy and the vaccine that they should think about?
So the answer to the first question is yes. If you're on a disease-modifying therapy, you should get the vaccine. There is no interaction between the vaccine and your disease-modifying therapy to make your disease-modifying therapy not work as well. No effect of the vaccine in decreasing the effectiveness of your disease-modifying therapy. So in the simple answer to that question is regardless of the disease-modifying therapy that you're on, you should get the vaccine.
And what should someone do if their doctor tells them that people with MS should not get the vaccine yet because there isn't enough safety data available?
So I think this is a tough one, John, because people build relationships with their physicians and they trust them because this is someone they know and that they've worked with for a long time. I would challenge those individuals to have their physicians go to, for example, the National MS Society website to gather more information about why they're making that particular recommendation. Because literally, this could be the difference. This could be a matter of life and death. As we know, tragically, we see that individuals who contract COVID can die from this infection and are dying at an alarming rate right now in the United States. So there are theoretical concerns that are not borne out by the data, and then there's the cold, hard reality of what happens when individuals do get infected with COVID.
My last question isn't specifically about the COVID-19 vaccine, but there have been reports that there's a neurological component to the virus itself. One study that I've seen shows that neurofilament light chain has been measured in the blood of people with more serious cases of COVID-19. Now, neurofilament light chain is an indication that axonal damage has occurred in the brain. The same neurofilament light chain can be seen in cases of concussion, and it can be seen in MS. What are you learning about the possible neurological implications of COVID-19?
So thanks, John. This is a question that has been right at the forefront from the beginning of the pandemic, especially since some of the most common symptoms that we see include a loss of taste and smell. And this raised the concern that perhaps the virus was what we would call neuroinvasive, meaning going into the brain and causing brain inflammation or like a meningitis or an encephalitis. What we have learned is that is not the case. There is no compelling evidence to suggest that the virus itself is going into the brain and causing a brain infection. We haven't seen it in the spinal fluid. It has not been recovered in the brain tissue in some of the autopsies. However, what we do see is the virus really does seem to affect blood vessels throughout the body, and the brain is not spared. And so there is a fair amount of evidence that for people with severe COVID, they have vascular involvement, small clots that form, and damage to the actual blood vessels that supply the brain. So if that happens, you're going to have damage to the brain that occurs, and then you're going to see those other markers, axonal damage markers, that will then flow from that. But we think that it is starting with involvement of the vascular system rather than from the brain primarily. So, but even so, it's alarming and it's concerning and is another piece of information for why we want to prevent anyone from getting COVID as much as possible.
Well, Dr. Sicott, I don't think that most of us can even begin to fully appreciate the enormous stress and strain that our country's healthcare professionals have been working under. So I want to take this opportunity to say thank you for everything that you and your colleagues are doing in spite of that enormous stress and strain to keep people affected by MS updated and informed during a very challenging time for everyone. And thanks for talking with me today.
John, thank you. And I'm just going to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that I'm not on the front line. I'm behind the supporting the front line. And I would like to make a shout out to my colleagues in our neurocritical care unit and our stroke team. These are our acute care neurologists who are literally on the front lines, along with our nurses and nurse practitioners, who are really bearing the brunt of this pandemic. And I think when we talk about the vaccine and how this is important, it's also important for people to understand that there is a lot of strain on the medical system, and this impacts everyone, because if we're so overwhelmed with COVID patients, then we're not able to take care of people who have a heart attack, who get in a car accident, who have an MS relapse. So it's all of our responsibility to do as much as we can to get us past this pandemic, and the vaccines and all of the social distancing that we've talked about previously are the keys to getting us to a better future. So thank you for the opportunity to have that little editorial comment.
Now that we've covered the science, let's look at someone's actual lived experience. Diane Kramer is a nurse. 11 years ago, Diane was diagnosed with MS. And 7 DMTs later, Diane is on Ocrevus. Diane has already received the COVID-19 vaccine, and in a moment, She'll be joining us to walk us through her experience. I'm talking with my friend and a great friend of the podcast, Diane Kramer. Diane is a nurse. She was diagnosed with MS in 2010. And the reason we're talking with Diane today is because Diane is a healthcare worker. She's already received the COVID-19 vaccine. Welcome back to the podcast, Diane.
Hi, Don. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So tell me, when did you receive your COVID-19 vaccination? And do you happen to know if you received the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine?
Oh, sure. So I actually received my first dose of the vaccine almost 3 weeks ago, about 21 days ago. And I received the Pfizer vaccine. So it is a two-dose vaccine or at two different times, about 21 days apart.
Are you currently on a disease-modifying therapy?
I am. I am on my lucky number 7 disease modifier since I've lived about 10 years with diagnosed MS, and I'm using ocrelizumab. So I've been successfully on ocrelizumab or Ocrevus since about early 2017.
And when did you last receive Ocrevus?
My last infusion of Ocrevus was about 5.5 months ago. So I'm coming up on my next Ocrevus infusion at the end of February.
So I'm curious, did you have to make any adjustments in trying to either time your vaccination or timing your next infusion?
That's a super great question, because I needed to time my flu shot vaccine, which I also received with the approval of my neurologist. And it's a good fit for me because I am a healthcare professional who is around lots of people. But I didn't need to time my disease modifier versus the COVID vaccine on my neurologist approval for that. You know, it is individual for everyone. But when I got the access to the vaccine, my first call was to my neurologist to find out if I needed to take any special measures one way or another.
So that leads me to the very next question. What advice did you get from your neurologist?
To go for it with a big happy thumbs up in the email and everything. Both he and I were a little bit concerned about, I have just recently returned to work after 5 years of retirement in the middle of a global pandemic, living with multiple sclerosis on a disease modifier. So I am all of the risk categories. And this was a safeguard that we knew that we could take. So his glowing recommendation for me to go for it and me having access, early access to it as a healthcare provider and a first line essential responder was really the biggest like I said, the biggest thumbs up, the biggest go for it that I could get. There were no limitations to how or when I could have it done, except for the typical recommendations of if you're having any flu-like symptoms, you're not feeling well, to not have your vaccination at that time. Other than that, it was green light, go.
So what was your experience getting the vaccine, and have there been any side effects?
So the experience getting the vaccine was actually a very bonding experience for me and the other 4 healthcare professionals in my office. We got it at a local hospital, which is a little bit on the smaller side. That's where we were credentialed and where we had access to it. And it was really neat being in the line to roll up your sleeves and do our part to protect our community and to protect ourselves. I had a little bit of a sore arm the next day, but otherwise for me, I had no side effects afterwards. I pre-medicated with some NSAIDs per my neurologist's recommendation. He says that for all of my vaccinations, though. And I was good to go the next day. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with round 2 as I'm not anticipating anything, though.
So just to translate that fancy medical jargon into everyday English, NSAID, something as simple as Tylenol, right?
Absolutely. I popped a couple of ibuprofen beforehand and there was nothing to it. The person that gave it to me was actually someone who has a family member affected by MS. And she hugged me afterwards, as our 2 vaccinated masked people did. It was so excited that she was doing what she could and giving me the vaccination of protecting the MS community.
Slightly offbeat question for you, but I'm curious, yes. You know, the pandemic has certainly affected so many people in a profoundly serious physical way. But even people who have not contracted COVID-19 have certainly been affected emotionally by it, by the isolation, by the change to our routine, by so many things we're not used to. After being vaccinated, did you feel any of that psychological burden lift?
I did. I felt like so I have a 16-year-old daughter. So the only thing that makes quarantine worse is quarantining with a teenager. So who, you know, her life stopped in March, her social life stopped. And we had to really hold the line with, we need to social distance. You can't have friends over. You can't do any of that. That was actually the first place where I felt the tightened grip of quarantine release, was that I was feeling more confident in the ability for my daughter to open our home back up again. And, you know, it's winter in Pennsylvania here. During the summer, we can meet in the front yard. But this meant that now you could come over and be a little bit more accessible. And that just was a burden that began to lift 21 days ago.
If I can just sort of summarize some of the key points that I would love our listeners to take away from this conversation. You're living with MS, you're on Ocrevus, you received your COVID-19 vaccination outside of a sore arm, you didn't experience side effects, and by the way, your neurologist gave you a big green light, thumbs up, to go get that vaccination. Anything else we ought to add?
I think that pretty much sums it up. Doing the what we can do. You and I have talked about this on more than one occasion through the past almost year of quarantine and COVID, doing what we can do to protect not just our MS community, but our local communities and our global communities, means stepping forward and saying, I'm willing to protect me to protect you. And I felt like it was the best way that I could continue to give back to my community.
Well, Diane, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks for taking a few minutes to share your experience with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. I realize this episode was a little different from our typical format, but if we're learning anything as we live through this pandemic, it's that it's perfectly okay to do things a little differently. And I wanted to make sure that we addressed the questions that I know are on a lot of your minds about the COVID-19 vaccine. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society, and you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/177. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I don't think that I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does the National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19, so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today, because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.